You've opened your phone to text someone about something funny that just happened, and for a split second, you forgot they're gone. Then the grief hit you all over again. But lately, there's something else, too. Someone new has appeared in your life, and the guilt feels like you're committing a crime against the person you loved most. If you're feeling drawn to someone new, but paralyzed by the fear that moving forward means leaving your late spouse behind, if you lie awake wondering whether it's too soon, even though it's been months or years, if you catch yourself downplaying your past relationship when talking to someone new, or alternatively, mentioning your late spouse so frequently it's like you're keeping them in the room as protection, if you felt a spark of genuine connection with someone and immediately crushed it down because it felt like betrayal, if you're exhausted from monitoring your own heart like a security guard, deciding which feelings are allowed and which need to be locked away, if you've noticed yourself sabotaging potentially beautiful connections because some invisible rule book says you haven't grieved properly or long enough, if you feel like you're being pulled apart by two competing truths, that you still love the person you lost and that you're capable of feeling something real for someone new, then you're experiencing what I call the ghost guard paradox. You've probably tried giving yourself deadlines. After a year, I'll be ready. After 2 years, it'll be appropriate. But those dates came and went, and the guilt remained exactly the same. You've likely tried the opposite too, forcing yourself to date before you felt ready, thinking exposure therapy would help, only to feel worse, more fragmented, like you were play-acting at being available while your real heart was somewhere else entirely. Maybe you've read articles about moving on that made it sound like grief is a highway with a clear exit ramp and you just need to take it. Perhaps you've had well-meaning friends tell you they would want you to be happy, which somehow made you feel worse, not better, because happiness feels like evidence that you didn't love them enough if you can find it again. You might have tried keeping your late spouse a secret from new people you meet, thinking a clean slate would help, but the omission felt like erasure, like you were murdering them a second time. Or you've done the reverse, mentioned them so prominently that no one new could possibly imagine fitting into your life. You've probably tried therapy that treated your situation like standard grief, without addressing this specific, excruciating question: how do you honor an eternal love while opening yourself to something new? Here's what this audio will give you. A framework for understanding that love doesn't operate on a scarcity model, and a practical method for holding space for both your enduring connection to the person you lost and your capacity for new intimacy. You'll discover why your heart isn't a pie with limited slices, but an expandable structure, and more importantly, how to actually experience that expansion without guilt or betrayal. You'll learn the specific mental shift that allows you to preserve the sacred space of your original love while genuinely opening a new space for someone else, without the two spaces competing or contaminating each other. And you'll walk away with a tangible practice that lets you move forward without the constant haunting feeling that you're abandoning someone who's counting on you to keep them alive through your loyalty. This isn't quick. This audio will ask you to sit with complexity rather than seek simple solutions. So here's what I need from you. 25 minutes of honest, undistracted listening, not while you're driving or folding laundry, but actually sitting with this. The insights here only work if you let them land fully. Can you give yourself that? If so, take a breath and let's begin understanding how your heart actually works. You've been told that time heals all wounds, that when you're ready, you'll just know, that you need to move on or let go before you can love again. And maybe you've tried. Maybe you've waited years, thinking that eventually the guilt would fade, the loyalty would loosen its grip, and you'd naturally feel permission to open your heart to someone new. But here's what nobody tells you. That approach only addresses the surface of your struggle, It treats grief like a countdown timer, as if there's a finish line where your love for your late spouse expires and you're suddenly cleared for new feelings. The problem is, love doesn't have an expiration date. Your bond didn't end because their life did. So you wait and wait, and the guilt doesn't disappear. It just gets quieter, lurking beneath every coffee date, every moment of connection, every flutter of possibility with someone new.
You might feel less raw than you did a year ago, but that doesn't mean you feel free. This incomplete approach assumes your hesitation is just about grief intensity, when actually it's about something far more complex, the architecture of loyalty itself. The real issue runs deeper than your personal healing timeline. Our entire cultural system is working against you. Think about how we talk about relationships. We use phrases like moving on, finding closure, letting go, and the one. Every single one of these concepts operates on a scarcity model, the assumption that you have one heart space, one true love, one exclusive loyalty. From the movies you watch to the stories you hear, the narrative is always the same. Previous love must end for new love to begin. Remarriage after death is portrayed either as betrayal or as evidence that you've finally healed, which implies you were broken before. Even well-meaning friends contribute to this. They say things like, "Your spouse would want you to be happy," as if you need their permission transmitted through speculation. Or they avoid mentioning your late partner around a new partner, creating this awkward erasure where suddenly years of your life become taboo. The message is clear. Old love and new love cannot coexist in the same conversation, let alone the same heart. You're operating inside a system that has never given you a model for loving twice. Every template you have is built on replacement, not expansion. So what do most people do? They try to push through. They force themselves to date before they're ready, thinking action will create permission. They deliberately avoid talking about their late spouse, trying to prove they're available. They rush to feel something new, hoping intensity will override loyalty. And this is where the suppression trap snaps shut. Because when you try to minimize one love to make room for another, you don't create space, you create internal warfare. Here's what actually happens. Every time you suppress a memory to seem more present with someone new, your subconscious registers it as betrayal. Every time you feel guilty about feeling joy, you're teaching your nervous system that new love equals danger. Every time you hide the depth of your continuing bond, you fragment yourself, and fragmented people cannot fully love. You end up in this exhausting middle space where you're not honoring the past and you're not fully available to the present. You become guarded with new people because vulnerability feels like disloyalty. You second-guess every feeling because you're trying to measure whether it's too much or too soon. The pressure to choose between loves makes you unavailable to both. The suppression trap is particularly cruel because it disguises itself as healing. It feels responsible to compartmentalize, mature to not dwell, healthy to focus forward. But your heart registers this as abandonment, and nothing keeps you more stuck than the feeling that moving forward requires leaving someone behind. But here's what's really happening beneath all of this, the mechanism that almost nobody identifies, the ghost guard paradox. Your late spouse exists in your heart as both memory and protector. The memory part you understand, the stories, the moments, the love you shared. But the protector part is invisible. Unconsciously, you've positioned your continuing loyalty as a guard at the door of your heart. This guard's job is to ensure nobody unworthy gets in, to maintain standards, to protect the sanctity of what you had. And here's the paradox. The guard is doing its job perfectly. Every time you meet someone new, the ghost guard runs a comparison protocol. Are they as kind, as funny, as understanding? Do they love you as deeply? The standard isn't just high, it's impossibly entwined with grief, nostalgia, and the idealization that naturally occurs after loss. But more than that, the ghost guard operates on a false premise that letting someone new in means the guard has failed, that a new love is an intruder, not a guest. So the guard rejects everyone, not because they're unworthy, but because the system is designed to protect through exclusion, not expansion. Until you address the ghost guard paradox, no amount of time will help, no amount of self-permission will work, because you're not just trying to open your heart, you're trying to override a security system that believes it's protecting the most important love you've ever known. The guard doesn't understand that the house can have more than one room. It thinks every new person is coming to take over the existing space, to paint over the memories, to replace what cannot be replaced. And that's why you're stuck. Not because you're not ready, not because you haven't healed, but because you're trying to love again using a system designed for only one love at a time.
Now let me introduce you to the Heart Expansion Method, a framework I've developed specifically to help you navigate the seemingly impossible territory of loving again while still loving the person you lost. This isn't about moving on, it isn't about closure, and it absolutely isn't about replacement. This method is built on a fundamental insight that changes everything. The opposite of forgetting isn't remembering, it's honoring while living. Your capacity to love again isn't a betrayal. It's actually proof that your lost love taught you how to love deeply. They expanded your heart, and that expansion remains yours to use. It doesn't belong to the past. It belongs to you, right now, to use as you continue living. This approach is different from traditional grief counseling because it doesn't ask you to work through your loss to reach some final destination where the pain is resolved. It doesn't treat new love as a stage of recovery. Instead, it recognizes that your heart is capable of something most people don't understand: simultaneous, non-competing loves that exist in different spaces within you. Think of your heart as a house with many rooms. Your late spouse lives in a beautiful, preserved room filled with memories, photos, and love, a sacred space that will always exist. The ghost guard paradox has convinced you that opening a new room for someone new means demolishing that original room, but that's the lie. In reality, the house can expand. You're not replacing furniture, you're building an addition. Love is architecture, not inventory. You're not working with limited square footage, you're working with infinite potential space. The Heart Expansion Method gives you a practical, step-by-step process for building that addition without guilt, without betrayal, without the constant haunting sensation that you're doing something wrong every time you feel a spark of connection with someone new. The method follows an acronym that will help you remember the steps: ROOMS. Each letter represents a specific action that helps you maintain your connection to your past while opening yourself to your future. Recognize, open, observe, memorialize, step. These five actions, practiced consistently, will help you navigate the specific moments when the ghost guard paradox tries to convince you that love is a zero-sum game. Let's start with recognize. This first step is about developing the ability to acknowledge that grief and new love occupy different spaces within you, and learning to identify which emotions belong to memory and which belong to possibility. Right now, everything probably feels tangled together. You meet someone interesting, feel a flutter of attraction, and within seconds, you're flooded with grief, guilt, and the sensation that you've just betrayed the person you lost. All of these emotions crash into each other, and you can't tell what you're actually feeling. That's what the ghost guard paradox does. It blends these distinct emotional experiences into one massive, overwhelming wall that keeps you frozen. Recognize means learning to separate these strands. When you feel guilty about laughing at someone's joke, pause and ask yourself, "What am I actually feeling right now?" You might discover you're feeling three distinct things simultaneously. First, genuine enjoyment of this present moment. Second, love and longing for your late spouse. Third,
guilt about experiencing one and two at the same time. These are three separate emotional experiences, and they don't actually conflict with each other. The enjoyment doesn't erase the love doesn't forbid the enjoyment. The guilt is the ghost guard paradox inserting itself between two perfectly compatible emotions and telling you they can't coexist. Here's how this looks in practice. You're on a first date, maybe your first date in years, possibly decades. The person across from you tells a story that makes you laugh, really laugh, and for 3 seconds, you forget to feel sad. Then you remember, and immediately you feel like you've committed an unforgivable betrayal. The ghost guard paradox whispers, "How dare you laugh when they're gone?" This is the moment to recognize. Name what's happening. I'm experiencing joy in this present moment. I'm also experiencing love for my late spouse. These are happening in different rooms of my heart, and one doesn't cancel out the other. The guilt I'm feeling isn't evidence of wrongdoing. It's the guardian trying to protect me from imagined betrayal. The act of naming these separate emotional experiences begins to loosen the guardian's grip. You're not arguing with the guilt. You're not trying to convince yourself you shouldn't feel it. You're simply recognizing that guilt is one feeling among several, and it doesn't get to be the boss of all the others. Practice this recognition in low-stakes moments first. Notice when you feel happy doing something your spouse would have enjoyed. Notice when you feel attracted to someone's kindness. Notice when you feel interested in future possibilities. And notice when the guardian immediately steps in with guilt. Just notice. Just recognize. That's the entire first step. The second step is open. This is where you create conscious permission to explore new connection without seeking approval from the past. This might sound strange. Why would you need to give yourself permission? But the truth is, most people stuck in the ghost guard paradox are unconsciously waiting for permission from their late spouse. You're waiting for a sign, a dream, a feeling of release that tells you it's okay to move forward. And while some people do experience meaningful signs, waiting for permission keeps you stuck because you're treating new love as something that requires authorization from the past. It doesn't. Opening means making a conscious decision to grant yourself permission to be curious about new connections, to be open to possibility, and to explore what might develop without requiring approval from anyone, living or dead. This isn't callous or disrespectful. It's an acknowledgement that you're still alive, that your life continues, and that you have the authority to make decisions about your own heart. The way you do this is surprisingly simple, but emotionally significant. You speak your intention aloud to yourself. Find a private moment. Maybe you're in your car, or alone in your home, or on a walk. Say out loud, "I give myself permission to explore connection with someone new. This doesn't diminish my love for Name. I'm not betraying them. I'm continuing to live, which is what I'm supposed to do. I'm allowed to be curious. I'm allowed to feel attraction. I'm allowed to see where something might lead. I don't need anyone's permission but my own, and I'm giving it to myself right now." This might feel ridiculous. It might feel overly formal. You might cry while saying it. That's all fine. The point is to speak it out loud, to yourself, in your own voice. There's something powerful about hearing yourself grant permission. It breaks the spell of waiting. It interrupts the pattern of seeking signs. One person I worked with said he spoke these words while holding his wedding ring in his hand as a way of honoring both realities simultaneously, his ongoing love for his wife and his decision to remain open to life. Another person said it while looking at a photo of her late husband, not asking him for permission, but telling him what she'd decided. However you do it, the goal is the same: to consciously open a new room in your heart without waiting for someone else to hand you the key. The third step is observe. This is where you notice moments when the ghost guard paradox triggers guilt or withdrawal, and you practice naming it when it appears without judgment.
The guardian won't disappear just because you've recognized your emotions and granted yourself permission. It will keep showing up, especially at vulnerable moments. Observe is about developing a watchful awareness so that when the guardian appears, you can see it clearly rather than being overwhelmed by it. Let's say you're developing feelings for someone new, real feelings, not just passing attraction. You're thinking about them during the day. You're excited when you see their name on your phone. And then one evening, you realize you haven't thought about your late spouse all day, maybe for the first time since they died. And the guardian explodes into action. Suddenly, you're drowning in guilt so intense you can barely breathe. You feel like you're erasing them. You feel like you're proving that your love wasn't real if you can forget them even for a day. This is the guardian at maximum volume. Observe means stepping back just enough to see what's happening. Oh, this is the ghost guard paradox. This is the guardian telling me that not thinking about my late spouse for a day means I'm betraying them. That's not true, but that's what I'm feeling right now. I can observe this guilt without letting it make decisions for me. The key phrase here is without judgment. You're not telling yourself you shouldn't feel this way. You're not criticizing yourself for feeling guilty. You're simply observing that this is the pattern. This is the guardian doing its job, and you can notice it without obeying it. Think of it like watching weather move across the sky. You see storm clouds gathering. You note storm approaching. You don't judge yourself for the storm. You don't decide you're a bad person because there's a storm. You just observe that it's coming, and you prepare to weather it without letting it change your direction. This observational stance is incredibly powerful because it creates space between the feeling and your response. The guilt will come. The ghost guard paradox will trigger, but you can observe it happening instead of being swept away by it.
Practice this observation, especially in moments of new intimacy. The first time you hold someone's hand, the first kiss, the first time you introduce someone as your partner. These are high trigger moments when the guardian will be loudest. Before these moments, if possible, or immediately during them, practice observing, "The guardian is here. I feel it. I see it. I'm noticing the guilt without letting it tell me what to do." Over time, this observation doesn't make the guardian disappear, but it does reduce its power to control your choices. The fourth step is memorialize. This is where you establish a dedicated ritual or space that honors your late spouse separate from your new relationship, creating clear boundaries between rooms. This step is essential because the ghost guardian paradox thrives in ambiguity. When your past and present are all mixed together, the guardian can't tell where one ends and the other begins, so it treats every new experience as a threat to the old love. Memorialize creates clarity. It says, "This space, this ritual, this time is for my late spouse. It's sacred, it's protected. Nothing will intrude on it." And that clear boundary actually gives you freedom in the rest of your life. There are countless ways to memorialize. Some people create a physical space, a shelf, a corner, a room where photos and meaningful objects live. This becomes the room in your heart that belongs only to your late spouse. You visit it intentionally. You spend time there. You don't avoid it, but you also don't live there. Other people establish a ritual, lighting a candle every Sunday evening and spending 30 minutes looking at photos, journaling to their lost love, or simply sitting with memories. Others mark important dates, anniversaries, birthdays, the date of death, with specific traditions that honor what was without trying to keep it alive in the present. The key is that this memorialization is boundaried. It has a dedicated time or space. It's not diffused throughout your entire life, making everything a potential trigger for guilt.
One widow I knew kept her wedding ring on a necklace and touched it every morning while saying her husband's name. It took 30 seconds. It was sacred. And then she went about her day, including eventually dating someone new, without feeling like she was betraying her husband because she'd already honored him that morning. The ritual created a room, and that room was safe and separate. This might sound like compartmentalization, and in a sense it is, but it's healthy compartmentalization. It's not about suppressing grief or pretending your past didn't happen. It's about giving grief a home so it doesn't have to follow you everywhere. When you create a clear memorial space or ritual, you can tell the guardian, "I haven't forgotten. I'm not erasing anyone. I honor that love here, in this specific way, but the rest of my life remains open to new experiences." This clarity is what allows you to build the addition without feeling like you're demolishing the original room. The fifth step is step. This is where you take one vulnerable action toward new connection each week, recognizing that moving forward is honoring the love you learned, not abandoning it. All the previous steps are preparation. This is where you actually build the new room. And it needs to be incremental, intentional, and regular. Not a giant leap, not a dramatic gesture, just one vulnerable step each week. What counts as a vulnerable step? It might be accepting a date invitation instead of declining with an excuse. It might be having a conversation with someone new where you share something real about yourself. It might be sending a message to someone you're interested in. It might be telling a potential partner about your late spouse instead of avoiding the topic. It might be introducing someone you're dating to your friends or family. It might be using the word partner or girlfriend or boyfriend for the first time. Whatever feels like a genuine risk, whatever makes you feel exposed, whatever triggers the guardian, that's a step. The reason it needs to be weekly is that the ghost guard paradox gains power in stillness. When you stay frozen, the guardian gets stronger. It convinces you that staying still is safety. But when you take regular steps, even small ones, you prove to yourself over and over that moving forward doesn't destroy the past. Each step that doesn't result in catastrophe weakens the guardian's argument. You take a step and your late spouse isn't erased. You take another and their memory doesn't disappear. You take another and you realize you're building an addition, not burning down the house. Here's what this looks like in practice. Week 1, you accept an invitation to coffee with someone who's expressed interest. Week 2, you have that coffee and share something honest about yourself. Week 3, you agree to a second date. Week 4, you have a conversation with your late spouse's photo, telling them what you're doing and why, not seeking permission, but maintaining connection. Week 5, you hold hands with this new person for the first time, feeling the guilt, observing it, and choosing to continue anyway. Week 6, you introduce this person to a friend. Small steps, vulnerable steps, regular steps. This is how you build. Now let's talk about the obstacles you'll face, because the ghost guard paradox won't surrender easily. The biggest obstacle is the guilt that comes in waves, often at the moments when you're happiest with someone new. You'll be laughing with them, feeling genuinely joyful, and then suddenly you'll be hit with a grief so intense it feels like it might split you in half. This isn't evidence that you're doing something wrong. This is evidence that you're doing something scary. The guardian sees you building that new room and panics, trying to pull you back to the familiar pain of staying frozen. When this happens, return to observe. Name it. This is the guardian. This is the paradox. I'm feeling guilt and grief, and I can feel these things while still choosing to continue. Another obstacle is other people's judgment. Friends, family members, or even your late spouse's relatives might have opinions about your timeline, your choices, or the person you're interested in.
Some will think you're moving too fast, others will think you're disrespecting your lost love's memory. This external judgment can amplify the internal guardian, making you doubt yourself. Remember, they're operating from their own ghost guard paradox, their own fear that letting you move forward somehow diminishes the person who died. You can't control their reactions, but you can remind yourself that you're not building your life by committee. The heart expansion method gives you a framework that honors both your past and your present. You don't need to justify it to anyone else. A third obstacle is the new person you're connecting with. They might struggle with the reality that they're not your first love, that your heart contains a room they'll never enter, that you'll have moments when grief overtakes you, even when things are going well between you. This requires honest conversation. Share the house metaphor with them. Help them understand that the room dedicated to your late spouse isn't competition, it's history, it's honor, and it's actually what made you capable of loving deeply in the first place. The right person will understand that your capacity for loyalty, depth, and commitment is exactly what makes you worth loving now. So why does this method work? Because it's built on the truth about how human hearts actually function, rather than on the myth that love is limited. Your heart isn't a pie where every piece you give away leaves less for others. Your heart is a house that can expand infinitely. The ghost guard paradox works by convincing you of scarcity, by insisting that new love consumes old love. But thousands of years of human experience prove otherwise. Parents love multiple children without the second erasing the first. People have best friends without ranking them. We can love our parents, our siblings, our friends, our children, all simultaneously, all deeply, without any love diminishing the others. The only relationship we've been taught to think of as singular and mutually exclusive is romantic love, but that's cultural conditioning, not emotional reality. The heart expansion method works because it aligns your actions with your actual emotional capacity, rather than with the limiting story the guardian tells. When you recognize that different emotions live in different spaces, you stop treating them as contradictory. When you open yourself with conscious permission, you reclaim authority over your own life. When you observe without judgment, you reduce the guardian's power to control you through guilt. When you memorialize with clear boundaries, you protect the past while freeing the present. And when you step forward regularly, you prove to yourself over and over that moving forward and honoring backward aren't opposites, they're complementary actions you can do simultaneously. This isn't theory, this is practice, and practice, repeated consistently, becomes your new reality. So you've learned the heart expansion method. You understand now that your heart isn't broken or betrayed by loving again. It's actually being honored by expanding to hold both what was and what could be. Now comes the most important part, putting this into practice, because understanding something intellectually and actually living it are two very different things. Let me give you a clear path forward, starting right now, in this moment. Right now, while you're still listening to this, I want you to do something simple but profound. Place your hand on your heart and say out loud or silently, "I can hold them both." That's it.
Just that phrase. I can hold them both. The love you had and the love that's coming. The person you lost and the person you're becoming. The grief and the possibility. Feel your chest as you say it. Notice that your heart doesn't contract at these words. It actually opens. This is your first act as an integrated lover. You're acknowledging that expansion is already happening, even now. Today, within the next few hours, you're going to complete your first gratitude transfer. Set aside 15 minutes when you can be alone and undisturbed. Write down 3 specific things your past love taught you about yourself. Not about them, about you. Maybe you discovered you were braver than you thought. Maybe you learned you could be soft and still be strong. Maybe you found out what you actually needed in a relationship. Then, and this is crucial, write 1 sentence about how each of these discoveries will serve your future.
You're literally transferring the wisdom from one chapter to the next. This isn't about moving on from your past love. It's about moving forward with what they gave you. Tomorrow, you're going to establish what I call the dual honor practice. Find two small objects that can sit on your nightstand or desk. One represents your past love, maybe a small stone, a particular coin, anything meaningful but not overwhelming. The other represents your future. It could be as simple as a key or a seed. Every morning when you wake up, you're going to touch both objects and acknowledge what each represents. I honor what was, I welcome what will be. This takes 30 seconds, but it rewires your brain to stop treating past and future as enemies. They're not in competition, they're in conversation. Throughout this week, days 2 through 7, you're going to practice the expansion check-in 3 times each day. Set reminders on your phone if you need to. Morning, midday, and evening, pause for just 60 seconds and ask yourself, what am I holding right now? Notice if you're gripping your grief too tightly, if you're pushing away possibility too aggressively, or if you're actually managing to hold both with open hands. There's no right or wrong answer. This is just data. You're building awareness of your heart's capacity. Some days you'll notice you're making space easily. Other days you'll catch yourself contracting. Both are fine. You're not aiming for perfection. You're aiming for consciousness. By day 7, this check-in will start to feel natural, like checking your own emotional weather. Also this week, practice the active inclusion language we discussed. When you think about future possibilities, whether that's dating again, opening your heart, or just imagining love in your life, deliberately use and instead of but. Catch yourself when you think, I could try to meet someone new, but what about my past? Stop. Reframe. I carry my past love with me, and I'm capable of new connection. Every time you make this linguistic shift, you're literally retraining your brain's neural pathways. Language shapes reality. Choose expansion language. By day 30, here's what you'll notice. When you think about your past love, you'll feel warmth without devastation. When you imagine future love, you'll feel possibility without guilt. You'll catch yourself naturally holding both at once. Maybe you'll smile at a memory while also feeling genuinely open to meeting someone new. You won't feel like you're betraying anyone. You'll feel like someone whose heart has grown large enough to contain multiple truths. You'll be living as the integrated lover. Remember, you're not the person who has to choose between honoring the past and embracing the future. You're the person who understands that real love, the deepest kind, actually expands your capacity for more love. Your heart isn't a zero-sum game. Listen to this again whenever you need reminding. Your expansion has already begun.